listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Andy.
Wait a second. What? What's happening? This is weird.
I'm crashing lounge.
Rachel got replaced by Andy. That means something very strange is happening today. Andy, why don't you tell us your brainchild for this episode? Because I've heard that you've been telling people all over the International Center that you've been very excited to do a coffee hour crossover episode with the Ladies Lounge. And here we are today. So this is happening. Well, but
you do,
but
like,
what is it?
You do recipe card episodes, right?
Now we do Iron Ladle.
Iron Ladle,
yes.
That's right. You've
food
done recipe
episodes,
cards.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I love food.
Uh-huh.
More than anybody I know.
it's what brings everyone around the table.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And
it's what's for dinner. This is
the season. The season is upon us, the festive season. You know, an idea like this a few years ago is what led to, turned into the Pie Social.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Sarah and I were in the studio for the coffee hour, and we were talking about, pie season's coming up, like Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
We should just talk about pie on the coffee hour. And then.
And now, like, it's an annual.
We should make
event.
Pie and invite people to eat it and talk about it.
Yeah.
And now it's become a tradition.
Uh-huh. Now it's a thing.
A few years in now, more than two. I think we're on, like, we've done three or four now.
I advertised it as the third one. So hopefully that was accurate.
Okay. It was the third one.
I don't know.
So I like pie. That became Pie Social. At my church, I was interested in the idea of roasting chestnuts.
Mm-hmm.
So we added this tradition of roasting chestnuts on Christmas Cantata Sunday.
Yeah.
While the cantata's going on, I'm outside with the campfire roasting chestnuts. And then when the cantata's over, everybody comes out and has some chestnuts. There are just a lot of traditions with food, like, associated with holidays. And that one, you know, was in a song. Song, you know, chestnuts. Think what other food comes up in multiple Christmas carols.
Yeah. It's figgy pudding.
Figgy pudding. And this is something that Erin and I bond over. We have a particular Christmas album that we love.
It is one of the greatest of all Christmas albums, and that is John Denver and the Muppets Christmas album, Christmas Together.
Are you familiar with this?
I'm sure I've heard it, but I don't think I have the same love for it as you do. Maybe it's an age thing. I don't know.
What are you saying?
It transcends. Transcendent.
I don't know. I have other favorite Christmas.
The Muppets.
I do love the Muppets.
It's
Muppets Christmas Carol.
So Muppets Christmas Carol is another thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what I know for the Muppets.
And it's from probably close to the same era, I would think, around the same time. Mm-hmm. And then, anyway, we wish you a Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Now bring us some figgy pudding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Miss Piggy hears, what? Piggy pudding?
And no. It's made with figs.
And bacon. So we're going to get to that. We're going to get to the history of figgy pudding and maybe some of the ingredients that you might find in figgy pudding today on this crossover episode of the Coffee Hour and the Lutheran Ladies Lounge. Thank you for letting me crash the lounge. Mm. I appreciate it.
This episode is only happening because you really wanted to talk about figgy pudding and we're the people to talk about it with. So here we are.
I wanted to attempt making figgy pudding.
And I wanted to try it.
And Erin wanted to try it.
There you go.
So that's what we're going to do today.
Perfect excuse for an episode.
I am not cooking. I'm not making figgy pudding while we're talking today because it takes 2.5 hours.
Yeah, that would not happen.
That's on the low side from what the research I've done. Uh-huh. Like, that's sort of the bare minimum it can take.
Well, that's what I put in, was the bare minimum. Okay, so why this fascination with nostalgic things? I don't know.
Mm.
Chestnuts intrigued me. Pie, I mean, everybody can relate to that, right?
Everyone loves pie.
If you don't like pie, well, I'm sorry, but pie, chestnuts, now figgy pudding. Thoughts on why nostalgic things? I mean, it's not like figgy pudding was like a great part of my history, although I do have English history. Like,
you might
English
be the
ancestry.
Most British out of all of us, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. More than me, definitely.
That's English.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Christmas is a time for nostalgic things, though. Mm-hmm. And like, if it's connected to something that you guys love this John Denver album, and if talking about figgy pudding, then it makes sense that you're just going to want to try it. I know there's things in my, definitely not figgy pudding, but there's other things that are very nostalgic to me during Thanksgiving and Christmas and like the seasonal holidays that you know, it kind of just warms your heart a little bit when you get to talk about them or consume them if it's food, which it sounds mm-hmm. like generally is for you, Andy.
I guess I have a lot of memories associated with food. And think of like how smells, mm-hmm. smells oh, yeah. of food, like just trigger so many memories.
It's true.
Yeah. There are going to be some smells in the studio today with food. Create good memories or not. But that's the fun thing about nostalgia. I was reading about nostalgia today and we kind of reimagine those memories. That's mm-hmm. what's good about nostalgia and why it feels so good is because we reimagine them and forget, like take out the painful or like lots of pleasant parts. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes them good and nostalgic and why we like nostalgia and why it makes us feel all good and warm and fuzzy. And this food is going to make us feel warm and fuzzy today.
I'm sure it will. Okay.
So when I was intrigued by this, I started researching. Erin, you might have found some interesting history as well. Mm-hmm. But there's not any one definitive recipe for figgy pudding is what I found. It's more like a spectrum.
Mm-hmm. It's like a type of food.
Yes. It's almost like a food group.
Uh-huh.
Anything from like porridge that had lots of meat, maybe some dried fruit in it, mm-hmm. maybe nuts, to what evolved into like probably similar to what we call fruitcake today, mm-hmm. I'm sure came mm-hmm. out of that tradition. I could be wrong. I'm not a historian, so don't quote me on this.
I mean, looking at the ingredients, they are very similar. Mm-hmm. With fruitcake, the main difference is like the cooking method. Mm-hmm. It's instead of steaming or boiling it, you bake it. Mm-hmm. But the base ingredients are very similar.
But the outcome is very different depending uh-huh. on how you cook uh-huh. it as well. If you boil it, you get one texture. If you steam it, you get another texture. If you mm-hmm. bake it, it's just going to be even drier. So mm-hmm. you got to have more ingredients in it to keep it from getting too dry. The one that I did, I put it in a bath in the oven. No, okay. I did not. I did not cook this in the bathroom. In the bathtub.
Bain-Marie.
A what?
A bain-marie. That's the name of that. Like that's the type of cooking where you put it like, was it in a, like a pan that was filled with water and then you set it down mm-hmm. in it? That's a bain-marie. That's a type of.
Lesson learned. Learned something valuable today.
Aaron knows
I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but still.
Took a roaster, like a roasting mm-hmm. pan, filled that with 2 inches of water and then put the bundt cake pan in it, which there's probably a more specific, like more definitive.
Pudding vessel.
Yes, there are. Uh-huh. I read about that too uh-huh. when doing research for this as well. Anyway, that's how I did mine. And it kind of steams it more than uh-huh. anything. It's a bath, but it's not quite the same as steaming because wouldn't that be like in a steamer basket or something? I don't know. I'm not sure.
It would.
So,
And it would be closed so that like it would be surrounded by the steam.
So this kind of worked the same way because the bundt cake pan was covered with foil and uh-huh. the foil was like greased and the grease side down. Yeah. So it covers the bundt cake. But you know, in the middle of a bundt cake pan, there's that column in the middle with a hole in it.
Right.
So mm-hmm. all the moisture from the water underneath it was coming up through that and staying under the foil. So essentially it's steamed.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure if that's technically steamed, but anyway. So meat, dried fruit, maybe nuts, could get fancier with something sweet like honey or something. Mm-hmm. There's usually some sort of, in today's figgy pudding, there's something sweet like sugar.
Yeah.
Maybe honey. I guess you could do maple syrup.
I mean, you could. I don't think it would be very traditional. I think like the maple, isn't that maple syrup? That's like a North American flavor. Mm-hmm.
I think honey would be excellent in this. Mm-hmm. It would help it age sweeter too. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, spirits.
Also adding some sweetness in some cases. So,
definitely a flavor profile.
Yeah. Huh?
Some sweetness, yes. Uh-huh. Ooh, it wakes you right up.
Presence.
Or puts you to sleep.
some body. Presence.
Yes, there we go. Body. We're disembodied. So like rum or other distilled alcohol, yes. Uh-huh. The term pudding, confusing to us Americans.
Mm. It's so confusing. I don't understand.
It is. Yeah. It took me a long time to understand that it just means dessert, right? Or is it a specific type of dessert?
I'm not quite sure. That's a question for our British friends.
I think based on only on books that I've read and how I've inferred the definition, that's how I've done a lot of learning of definitions in my life is inferring from books I've read. I think it can be a specific genre of dessert, but it can also serve as the like course. Like, oh, it's the pudding course. This is pudding. And now from there, it can be anything. What are we having for pudding? We're having cake.
I mean, if it has meat in it, then that's, yeah, that's a course. I mean, some of them look pretty dense. That I was looking at online.
Yeah. If you look up the etymology of pudding, it gets strange very quickly.
But I do recall as a child, my mom making bread pudding.
Oh,
yeah. That's the one I know of.
That's probably the one Americans are most familiar with would be bread pudding.
Yeah.
And that sauce that, oh, the hot, like sticky, sweet, syrupy sauce that goes on. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a real treat. Yeah. So you can do that too. You can put like a liquidy, sweet sauce on it. It could have rum in it, could have brandy, could have any of those, but those aren't too sweet in and of themselves. So
port.
That would port, yes, that's true.
Ooh.
One I read you could mix with orange juice. That would sweeten it up a bit too as well.
That'd be good.
Okay, so the term pudding is confusing.
But I think our modern flavor profile, we like things sweeter. We like our desserts to be more noticeably sweet. We like the higher contrast of this is a sweet thing. It's for dessert, so it needs to be definitely sweet. And that, I think, is just our modern approach to things. Back when in the 1800s, it wouldn't. I don't think they would have felt like it needed to be as sweet as we enjoy today.
Especially as Americans.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We like Americans our sugar, like don't we?
Yep.
So it became a very festive dish associated with parties and then became associated with parties around Christmas, particularly like the, I guess, the sweeter ones, the fruit cake, or I mean, the fruit, the dried fruit, things like that in it.
Yeah.
And by the 19th century, fun fact, cooks would try to give it time to develop flavor, like let it sit from like weeks up to a month. And if it sits for a month and you're not going to have it till Christmas, when does this mean we have to make this?
Stir up Sunday.
Yes.
I did not know this was a thing until...
This featured in books I've read as well, so I also know about this one.
Aaron knows everything about food.
I mean...
We should do a trivia challenge next year on figgy pudding just for Aaron.
I'm exhausted at all in this one episode.
Okay, what is Stirrup Sunday, Sarah?
It's stir up, not stir up in case people are mishearing us.
One R.
It doesn't have to do with horses.
Correct. Yes.
Not yet.
No.
You might need to ride your horse to deliver figgy pudding to someone.
I mean, you could. That would be fun.
Don't have a horse.
Stir up Sunday is traditionally when figgy pudding would be made. And this is the last Sunday before Advent in the Book of Common Prayer traditionally, which was confusing to me because in our Lutheran lectionary, you might be familiar with the collects, the prayers that start with stir up. That's what we use during the season of Advent. But this is the Sunday before Advent. So I think it's the last Sunday of the church year. That's how the math would work out. And it comes from the prayer in the Book of Common Prayer, which goes, stir up, we beseech thee, O Lord, the wills of thy faithful people, that they plenteously bringing forth the fruit of good works may of thee be plenteously rewarded through Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen. So that's when all the women would gather on that Sunday and make their Christmas puddings. And this is still a thing. I did a little bit of light Facebook research and the Church of England last year, they might do it this year too, as of time of recording, in a couple of weeks. Last year in 2024, they had a post about Stir Up Sunday is this Sunday. So it's time to start making your figgy pudding. So this is absolutely still a thing in the Church of England. And I love that there's a food for Christmas that correlates with a Sunday of the church year. That just is really amazing to me, who somebody who loves our rhythm of the church year. I love that, like, the commencement of making figgy pudding is connected to a prayer and a service. And that's been how it's been for a long time.
And that it requires some forethought.
Right.
Like a month in advance of and Christmas. Like, yeah.
It's 5 weeks before Christmas. It's so handy. 5 Sundays.
Like you get reminded. If you had forgotten, then when you're at church on that day, they're like, stir up. And you're like, oh, I got to make the pudding.
It's well, today.
Half the recipe's in the prayer. Did you catch stir up and then fruit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did someone look at this prayer and say, I think there's a good recipe in this?
That sounds like something you would do.
I think there's an episode of the Coffee Hour and the Ruth and Ladies Lounge crossover in this somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe literally why we're here.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Okay, so we've got Stir Up Sunday.
Yeah.
In the end of the church year in the Church of England, becomes a tradition. Has this made its way into your family, like, history in terms of traditions? Like, have you crossed Biggie paths pudding? With any like, families other
I
than...
I will say my family does have, it's not an annual tradition by any means, but we do have a deep love of very traditional fruitcake, which, as we discussed, there is... Part of why probably the recipes, like, the ingredients are so similar is because... Back in the olden days, you didn't have a grocery store that just stocked all the foods all the time from all over the world. You had very seasonal stuff that was grown locally. And so it makes sense that you'd see very similar ingredient profiles there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we do have a love of fruitcake that is just crammed full of fruit and nuts and
it's impressive.
And so rum.
I enjoy it with the rum. The historic tradition in my family has shied away from the hard liquor. they preferred using wine or grape juice to keep it moist. Uh-huh. But then there is an aging process. Like it is something that you have to make in advance and then wrap it up well. And you have to moisten it multiple times as it ages until it is ready. And then it can just be held for a year in your fridge to eat on gradually. So, yeah.
We have an entire episode about this.
Yeah, we do.
People want to know the full story. We did this for Ladies Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
Fruitcake.
Yeah.
But are you going to mix it up this year?
I'm very intrigued as we have like delved into this more and more. I'll be curious to taste today, and that might influence my decision. However, it is very intriguing.
I wouldn't base your whole opinion of putting on the recipe that I prepared today.
That is, I won't. It's not gonna turn on solely on your abilities, Andy.
Thank you. I mean, in order to accommodate our studio schedule, this particular one
was very last minute.
This one was in the freezer for a couple of days. So
you were planning to save it for like a later time to
maybe.
Yeah.
And I also didn't have time to prepare the proper hard sauce, like topping to sweeten it. But yeah. Did we mention, I think we talked about figgy pudding. We didn't mention the various names for it.
You're right.
So it could also be called Christmas pudding or plum pudding.
Yeah.
And it may not contain figs or plums when called figgy pudding or plum pudding.
Yeah.
It may or may not.
Those are nouns for a fruit, but also nouns that are just more of a genre, right?
Yeah.
It can simply mean like dried fruit, I think.
Yeah. Like as in like plum synonymous.
Like a plum assignment. Like it just means a really good, it's like a really good thing.
Have you used that phrase before?
No.
That's featured in books I've read too.
I feel like that's an episode in and of itself.
Aaron knows many things from books.
We need to take a quick break. Hopefully our listeners will come back after the break. As we're going to take a look at some stories associated with figgy pudding and even some recipes. Maybe measure. Some people are very like particular about measuring or maybe like me. Oh, put some of this, put some of that.
I bake by my heart.
You bake by your heart.
I don't use recipes.
We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth. It's weird saying my last name on this program.
Oh.
I'm Aaron Alter.
Yeah. The year is almost out, which means it's time to shop at the KFUO store for 25% off or more on everything. Head to kfuo.org/store for your discounted Yeti tumbler, Lutheran Ladies t-shirt, socks, limited centennial ornament, and more. The KFUO store year-end sale runs from November 24th through December 31st. Your purchase of any item supports our station and the ministry of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. kfuo.org/store.
Welcome back to the crossover episode of the Lutheran Ladies Lounge and the Coffee Hour. We're talking about figgy pudding and traditions associated with that. Where did this come from and what's in it? Why do we call it figgy pudding? And will you eat it again after you try today's recipe? All fun challenges.
That's the biggest question.
Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Sarah, you gathered some stories associated with figgy pudding from some of our friends.
Yeah. So yesterday when we decided we were going to do this today, I started emailing and messaging everybody I could think of that might have some relation to figgy pudding. And it turns out most of them are Australian, which is okay because this is like a British in the colonies kind of thing. So my Australian friends, my Canadian friends, a few friends that have some British roots, and the reviews are kind of mixed, which is kind of what I expected. Some people have zero association with it at all. Their families just don't do it. Other people really love it. So Dr. Tom Peach, who we've had on the Coffee Hour before, he's Australian, and he said his mom would make ice cream plum pudding, a kind of summer Christmas Australian take on the British classic. It basically involved breaking up pieces of plum pudding with some brandy into ice cream. So that's actually sounds
that's
really
right.
good.
It's summer in Australia.
Yes.
Christmas time.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, I like that twist.
Yeah. So we could do it during Share-a-thon and just make the ice cream version from from Tom Peach. Joanna Hensley is apparently the resident expert. So I've heard from other people on all of this. She's the one that actually told me about Stir Up Sunday. She said that you make the pudding in advance of Christmas by a few weeks, and that's the schedule that she follows. So she's married to an Australian, Dr. Adam Hensley, who we've also had on the Coffee Hour. And so this seems to be a tradition for the Hensley family to have figgy pudding. And I will be curious. She's a member at my church, so I'm curious to see if that shows up anywhere at my church this Christmas season. I would like my husband to try. I can't eat it, but I would like my husband to try it and see.
You can enjoy it vicariously through. You can enjoy it vicariously through him.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Yeah. Dr. Stephen Peach also said that his family has a recipe. The Peaches are not related as far as I know with the same last name. But his mom also has a similar pudding recipe that they would make during the holidays as well. And then Dorothy Glenn, whose parents are the Naumanns, we were talking about it quite a bit last night, and her story is kind of funny. Because she's a pastor's kid, they used to get figgy pudding all the time during the holidays. Like, everyone would give the pastor a figgy pudding. And she once mistaked the figgy pudding for chocolate chip pound cake, and she was very disappointed in the raisins and doesn't really like it now. Which, honestly, I don't blame her. I think I would have the same reaction. She will gladly eat the mince pies, but the figgy pudding is not a fan favorite. So, yeah, slightly mixed reviews, but the people who it's a tradition for, they seem to really, 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 really love it. So that sounds kind of like what you're going for, Andy. You want a figgy pudding you're going to love. So,
but there are so many options.
There are so many options.
Right.
Like, bake from your heart.
Yeah.
It's going to take time to find the figgy pudding that you love,
bake
maybe.
Bake from your heart.
Yeah.
That's also true.
Also very post-postmodern.
Right. But see, you like experimenting with food. So I feel like this is an adventure that is really perfect for you, because you can just try a new one and keep experimenting forever.
Well, I'm so glad that those friends shared those stories with you to share with us, because it's important to and valued by people more than just me. So I'm not just like some, you know, person who's fascinated with the idea of figgy pudding, but really is meaningful to people.
Yes, right, it is.
Erin, you did some research too in preparation for this episode.
Yeah.
Do you want to share with us anything you learned in your preparation while I slice up some figgy pudding for
excellent.
You? Catch you a slice of figgy pudding while we're getting ready to talk.
Mainly, as I was looking into it, I was particularly curious about what some of the recipes were that were out there, and that then led on the whole realm of steamed puddings. and what those can entail. I was particularly interested, and especially I'm curious to hear more from you, Andy, with what you made. It seems like a lot of the very traditional plum puddings, figgy puddings, Christmas puddings, include as a key ingredient suet, which is animal fat. It's like cow, like, no, it would be pig, I guess. It would be kidney. It's leaf lard. That's what it's called. Wow. It's the fat that's around the kidneys. It's particularly neutral in taste compared to fat that's found elsewhere in the bodies. Anyway, it's a thing. And of course, I know that you're not eating anything from a mammal.
Correct.
And so I'm curious, as you were going through your experiments, what did you choose to use as your fat? Tell me this isn't a fat-free figgy pudding you're about to serve me, Andy.
It is not fat-free.
Okay.
By no means is it fat-free. You're correct. I abstain from eating anything from mammals because I'm allergic to anything from mammals. And so I just use a plant-based butter in lieu of butter. Like many of the recipes I looked at involved butter.
Sure.
It is nice and warm. Now, if you want to, you can eat it plain. There's a little bit of
smells amazing.
Brandy here. I didn't have anything to sweeten it because I was on the run.
Uh-huh. So I will attempt that.
It's going to run right through it,
though. I know. You can't see this, but I've been served this beautiful slice of figgy pudding on a paper napkin. And now
I forgot about that. Didn't bring bowls.
A flask of brandy and encouraged to just
in the studio.
Pour it over. It's just this, like,
I hold a couple of drops.
Just a drop.
Notice I handed it to her to pour it, not me, because I would have had it all over right over her laptop. That's great.
Yeah.
And,
oh my word.
Ms. Alter, how did your laptop stop working? What seemed to occur before it stopped working?
Yeah, hang on. I gotta focus. I can't make jokes while I'm ripping out this brandy.
I tried it with the brandy at home too, and because you can, one of the traditions I read about was, you know, putting brandy or rum in a ladle and lighting it, and then pouring it over, like dimming the lights, and then pouring it over.
Yeah, presentation is everything.
The figgy pudding while it's burning.
Yeah.
So it becomes all about the presentation, and that's like the big tradition.
Oh my. It's fun when you can light your food on fire and then eat it. I don't know.
Right? Like Cherry's Jubilee or other dishes like that. I particularly liked the hard sauce, which is basically butter and powdered sugar. And I add a little almond extract. You could add brandy or rum to that to sweeten it as well. Before I go into the recipe, you were sharing stories. Did I interrupt you?
Oh, the other piece I was going to comment on, we talked about how it could sometimes in the past have included meat, but it does still today, like the very traditional approach to figgy pudding does still include this suet. So that does lend an umami to the finished dish. So you get this savoriness. It doesn't read as meat. You're not tasting meat, but there is like a savoriness to this dessert, which I feel like maybe part of why part of me wonders, are we seeing a bit of an increase of interest in this in the US, partly because we've experienced more umami high dishes. We've become more open to the idea of a dessert with some of that rich savoriness to it.
How would you describe umami for someone who doesn't really use that?
Yeah, it's a term. So it is, remember when you were a kid, if you're of the age of Gen X, there were the tastes, and there was sweet, sour, salty, and bitter. There were the four tastes, right? That you had the taste buds that could pick up four tastes. And it turns out, since I was a child, it has become acknowledged that there are actually five tastes. And the fifth taste is umami. Mm-hmm. And that word comes from, I believe it's from Japanese.
I think it's a
Japanese word. It's definitely from Asia. But it is the taste of savoriness. So it's not salty. It's the savory taste. And it's, anyway.
Which Americans would just say not sweet.
Yeah, not it's not sweet, right? But it's also not salty. It's not bitter. So it's umami. And
would Americans say bland?
Umami isn't bland.
No.
So
it's kind of like richness.
Like if you were adding, if you're adding just straight umami, you're adding MSG. That's like the classic umami booster. But this occurs naturally in a lot of foods. Tomatoes, raw tomatoes have naturally occurring MSG. And that's why like a really delicious ripe tomato, there's like that savoriness to it. Yeah. It's not sweet. It's not sour. It's not salty. Yeah, that's umami.
That's a poem.
So anyway, that's the suet features in this. And then it also functions like a lot of like pie crust, another seasonal food. When you use fat in the pie, it melts and it leaves pockets, right? That's how you get the beautiful layers in a pie crust. That same thing happens with the pudding. You get these little tiny pockets where the fat had been before it melts, and like the space firms up around it and fills with steam, and then the fat melts and soaks in, and you're left with a somewhat leavened experience.
The science of baking with Aaron Alter.
Yeah. This is how I know things, because we do episodes on the Ladies Lounge and I learned so much from Aaron about all kinds of stuff. It's amazing.
Also amazing. This is delicious. This is delicious, Andy.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. It was a fun experiment in the kitchen. So this particular recipe actually does include figs because I love figs. I felt obligated to try figs in it. Mm-hmm. So dried figs, we can provide a link. I'll put the link to the recipe. I think this one was from food.com.
Mm. Yeah.
So essentially, you got your dried fruit. You start with that. This was like 14 to 16 ounces of dried figs chopped up. I cut off all the stems. So hopefully there aren't any stems in your figgy pudding today.
Oh, dear.
And then you soak them in milk. In my case, no mammals. So I used oat milk because it's a little thicker, creamier. Works better in recipes than almond milk. Now, Sarah, you could use almond milk for your recipes.
Yeah.
So you soak them in that on the stove, warm them up. You don't want them to boil because you don't want to cook them per se, but you just want to soften up the dried fruit so that when you're biting into this, you're not biting into a chunk of dried fruit. Did you see Sarah's face for that one?
Yeah.
When I said dried fruit? Yeah. You don't want that experience of biting into dried fruit per se. You want this to like be nice, soft piece, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you simmer those a little bit. You don't even really want it to bubble a whole lot. You just want it to be warm. And then you mix your dry ingredients, flour, breadcrumbs, sugar.
I was surprised that breadcrumbs
they keep it moist.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
It just adds to that texture as well. So flour, breadcrumbs, the spices, a cinnamon, nutmeg. And I'm particular about what cinnamon I use. I like China cinnamon.
Oh, I'm a Vietnamese cinnamon. Oh,
I like
myself,
that for some recipes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So okay. What's the difference?
How would you describe the difference?
The Vietnamese is better.
I like them both, but for different things.
I personally just have such a love for that, and so I just don't stock two. I just have one cinnamon.
Which one smells like the Red Hots candy?
Oh.
One of them smells like Red Hots candy. Remember the candy of our childhood?
Oh, yeah.
I know what you're talking about. I would need to smell them side by side to remember which one of them has that flavor, that smell.
Did you stand in the spice shop and smell it? Yes,
I do. That's one of my favorite things to do. I do
that too. Okay. Well, we have more in common than we...
Oh, yes.
If you're looking for us, either one of us, just
you'll look in the spice aisle.
Looking
smelling
particularly
the spices.
Smelling the cinnamon. So there's a difference in cinnamon. So cinnamon, nutmeg, sugar. I use raw sugar, the madhava, I think is the name. So you know how brown sugar is made? Like they take all the, basically the molasses out, the brown stuff and separate it and then put it back in.
Right.
That's how brown sugar is made. You know, you make white sugar essentially and then add the molasses back to it. Raw sugar, they don't take it out. They just leave it in. And so it's all brown. So it still has that like nice, hearty brown sugar flavor.
Yeah.
Eggs and butter, melted butter, mix it all together. and then pour it in the pan. And then we'd already talked about the way you bake it in the bath in the oven.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Something I was thinking about when you were talking about doing the initial soak for the fruit, I suspect that part of why you do that, since this is a dessert that would be made in advance, right? We've already said it's like you make like 4 weeks before you're going to eat it. If you don't do that pre-soak, the fruit is still going to absorb the moisture, but it's going to be pulling it from your pudding. Mm-hmm. And so this is going to prevent you from having your pudding be dried out because your fruit has stolen all the moisture from the pudding. If you start with your pudding with the fruit already rehydrated to an extent, then it doesn't need to steal the moisture from the rest of your pudding.
Maybe that's how Stollen got its name.
Yes, thief dessert.
It stole it all. Okay, Erin, what would you like to attempt with a figgy pudding or a Christmas pudding?
Well,
which one are you going to try?
I'll tell you the recipe that I did look at. One, I did first as I started imagining figgy pudding. One idea that came to me was, I wonder if there are any recipes out there that use sourdough starter as part of their figgy pudding.
Oh,
and I did a little research, and this is not a widely practiced thing. I found one recipe on a sort of a classic sort of looking website, little old school. So I suspect that it has been tried and was not found especially appealing. However, the breadcrumbs, using sourdough breadcrumbs, I feel like that would be something that I would do. I also, as I was thinking about it with breadcrumbs and the idea of you're using dried fruits, nuts, the idea of using breadcrumbs in this, again, this is a frugal thing. Like, this is a dish that is eaten by all economic strata in there. But part of why you would use breadcrumbs, it makes sense. You could be saving your bread, like your crusts of bread, the heels at the end that get dried out as you're working your way through that loaf, save them up until it's time for pudding, and then grind them up for breadcrumbs. Again, it's a frugality. You don't need to use a new thing. It saves waste.
Yeah.
Helps prevent that. But I do think that some sourdough breadcrumbs, I feel like I would enjoy that little bit of a tang that would be added with that. I personally would also be very interested in trying to source. I've tried it in the past, and it is hard to source the leaf lard, the suet that I mentioned, but because it does seem to be such a traditional ingredient, I probably would have fun trying to source some suet that I could use in making a figgy pudding.
Could I use duck fat?
Does it taste like duck? I mean, sure. Why not?
I would wonder, and I think from what I remember from when I went into a deep research mode on pie crust at a previous time, part of why leaf lard is considered to be an excellent fat for it is because it has a relatively high melting point, I believe. So it doesn't melt immediately, which again helps with the structure of it. So I would be curious, does duck fat also have a high melting point? Okay, then I think, does it have a strong flavor? So that would be the other question is,
stronger than others. Yeah.
I think your approach, you ended up with a very delicious result. Absolutely. I just would have fun trying to look for beef suet. Why would you want to do that to end up with a dish you couldn't even lick the spoon while you were making it? That would be a disappointment.
I mean, I could, but it wouldn't end up.
That would be a big disappointment. So
that'd be a problem.
Yes, I would definitely do that. The figs were great. I think I probably would use figs again because that was delicious. I also am a big fan of the dried plum, the prune, as we say.
I feel like I'm on like a baking competition here. And I'm meeting with the judges right now.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, welcome to the ladies' lounge, Andy. This is what we do.
Here, have some more.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's absolutely delicious. I love it. I wish I could do an imitation of a British accent, but I'm not. That's not one of my gifts. So I can't do that. I have very few accents that I can do on demand. And I would also be curious about doing it in advance and then maybe even doing two so that I could make one and try it early and then have the other one age and be able to see, like, can I actually tell a difference? Is it worth making it 4 weeks early, even if it's traditional? Because what you made was delicious, and that was made like
2 days ago.
2 days ago.
Three. Yeah. So, 3 days ago.
Yeah.
And it, like, it froze for like
how would it change over time, just aged with a little bit of, you know, that preserving brandy.
And I will say, when serving it after it's been set aside for a while, be careful that you don't let it dry out.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you're trying to serve it again. So in this case, I put it in a little heated lunchbox, a lunchbox that warms up, and I put just a little bit of water in with it in a little, what do you call that?
A condiment cup? I wondered what that was.
Yeah,
okay, that's little, very clever.
Just a couple ounces
to
of water.
Keep the moisture in.
Yeah, to keep it from drying out in this little, it's kind of like a little mini slow cooker.
Yeah.
And some parchment in there so it didn't stick to everything.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't dry out.
And he's got the kitchen gadgets. Right.
All these great tips.
But I also think the Christmas pudding would historically have been like, you make and you, it's like the centerpiece feast.
Yeah.
Like you bring this out at the end of the giant Christmas Day dinner. It's the pudding and you're going to eat it all. Yeah. You're not going to save it for later. You're going to slice it up for everyone to enjoy.
Like leftover bacon. There's no such thing.
Yeah. It doesn't. Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't exist.
Exactly. Yeah. So delicious. I would also have fun. It's hard to make things burn, though, with alcohol. I've tried it in the past, and sometimes it doesn't work. And so would I want to actually practice and potentially, like, how many figgy pudding I need to make before I could successfully light it on fire? I don't know.
I only got a flame for just a few seconds.
Yeah.
Now, I imagine
you might
if you
have
pour,
to use really high proof alcohol. Right. That would probably also help.
Yeah. If you pour it over the whole thing to plenty of alcohol to work with and light
that
it.
Probably also.
I thought it made it taste bitter.
It doesn't need it. Exactly. Like
I thought it made it taste bitter. So I don't know.
It was delicious.
I would also like to add, not to like ruin your party right now going on, that for the rest of our allergy friends who may be in the same camp as me and listen to this recipe and say, well, I can't eat that because there's multiple things. If you Google figgy pudding recipe with whatever your allergies are, there's probably a recipe that you can. I've found a couple that I could probably. I don't really love dried fruit, so I'm not sure I would even like it, even if I could eat it. However, there's a couple of recipes that I actually could probably eat, which is slightly surprising, but also kind of cool. So there's this might be a dessert for everybody. If you've got your preferences, there's kind of just like a formula of things that you just kind of put together and make into something, and it kind of works. So,
it is pretty loose. As Andy said, this one is not one that requires really strict measurements. You can measure with your heart on this one. So I'm guessing you can substitute with your heart as well.
Yeah. And one of them does actually have maple syrup.
There you go.
I'm going to hold to my statement earlier then that it is a food group.
I think it is. I really think so.
Right.
I've found three recipes that are sort of kind of close to what I could eat, and they're all three completely different. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Do any of them involve suet?
No.
Oh, okay. See, when I hear suet, I think of the little bird feeder thing.
There's a lot of coconut.
You're right.
It involves animal fat, but bird seed as well.
Figs and coconut. Those are the like the common denominators across all three of them, but that's it. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, this has been fascinating and fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is the longest episode of the Coffee Hour
ever
in a long time. This share-a-thon. And I got to eat, so there's that.
Andy's so happy right now.
And get some more.
Me too. I will say this is a hearty dessert.
It is.
So a one slice is sufficient for me.
It's loaded.
It's made to feed a crowd.
Dense. Yeah. It's dense. Well, this has been fun. Thanks for letting me crash the Lutheran Ladies Lounge today and cross over with the Coffee Hour. It's been a lot of fun.
You're welcome. You can find all of our episodes of the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You can also join us in our Facebook group. If you've made figgy pudding, we definitely want to know. You can leave your comments and your pictures there in the Lutheran Ladies Lounge on Facebook or send us your photos on Instagram at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. You've been listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Andy. That's one for history.
'Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at kfuo.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us, too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give.
Okay, so we're a minute in. All right.
Are we taking a break in the middle?
It's probably not a bad idea. Yeah.
Okay, so the intro is lounge, but we're taking a break. Okay. It'll be fine.
Lunch takes a break every once in a while.
Sure. Yeah.
For share-a-thon.
Once a year. Once a year for share-a-thon.
Yeah. You want to share figgy pudding. It's almost the same.
That can be our share-a-thon episode. We can have Joanna on and just talk about figgy pudding for share-a-thon.
In the middle of spring?
That makes no sense.
Easter at that point, yeah. Mm.
Is there Easter pudding?
Probably.
I don't know. But I don't. It's... No, we're not. No.
Okay.
Let's do this.
I'm going to start.
2 minutes in.